There are two joys to be
first session after lunch. One is that measure of what the restaurant service is like in this town. And the other is the carbohydrate coma in which the audience will slowly but I, knowing a lot of the people on this panel, I think that we can expect to be able to overcome that. So I'm going to read bios from this end of the table so that people can change out their PowerPoints throughout the afternoon here. And we'll start with Jolene, or is it Jolene Beiser at the end of the table. She's archivist at the Pacifica Radio in North Hollywood, the repository of broadcast recordings of KPFA, KPFK, WBAI, KPFT, and WPFW in Washington. She is currently the Pacifica's NHPRC-funded, she's leading the Pacifica's NHPRC-funded project, American Women Making History and Culture from 1963 to 1982. In 2012, she led the development of Pacifica's Drupal-based content management, updating legacy records to up-to-date metadata standards. That was a very popular presentation a couple of years ago, as I recall. She completed her master's in library and information sciences at UCLA in 2009, and with a specialization in archives, audio preservation, faculty research, data management. In 2014, she served as chair of SAA's Recorded Sound Roundtable and has given several presentations at SAA and ARSC on radio archiving. Jolene Beiser.
Thank you. Hi there, I'm Jolene Beiser from Pacifica Radio Archives. Today, myself and my colleague Holly Rose McGee will be talking to you about Pacifica's project entitled American Women Making History and Culture 1963 to 1982. I'm gonna run through a brief overview of the project. I'm just gonna read this slide, which is really boring, but that way, that way I'll know that you got at least these details. So the American Women Making History and Culture Project is a project in which 2,000 recordings related that were broadcast on Pacifica radio stations related to the women's movement that were broadcast between 1963 and 1982. The majority of the tapes are from KPFA, KPFK, and WBAI because we have more tapes from them. And they were all part of our network during those years. The programs were produced by or feature women. They're often about feminism or include a conversation about women's rights or women's struggles. 1,700 tapes are being digitized at George Blood Audio in Philadelphia. 300 of the tapes were already digitized at Pacifica Radio Archives, but they're going to be included in the grant project, and then the digital files will be preserved long-term all together as a collection. All of the recordings are on quarter-inch reel-to-reel tape. The majority of them are 10.5-inch tapes, but we also have several hundred 7-inch tapes. Oops, I forgot to hit start. The grant period started October 1st, 2013, and will be ending just around the corner in 4 months, September 30th, 2015, and we received a $128,000 matching grant from the National Historical Publications and Records Commission. Oops, I wanted to go back. Just to give you a little flavor of the women's movement, I have a clip here of New York Congresswoman Bella Abzug, who is a very outspoken proponent of the American women's movement. This is her speaking in 1981 at UCLA.
I was sitting around in the Congress of the United States in 1975. That year also happened to be International Women's Year. I mean, that year they gave us a year. As you know, we're now in the decade of women. From 75 to 85 is the decade of women. I mean, who knows? If we behave, they may let us into the whole thing.
We have a number of recordings featuring Bella Abzug. She's got a great voice. We applied for the NHPRC grant twice, once in 2011 and again in 2012. We received it in 2012. I just want to highlight that we weren't sure which of our recordings we wanted to do, whether we wanted it to be about the women's movement. We had some other ideas of grants, so we consulted our grant officer at NHPRC, and he was very enthusiastic about the women's movement. So that's what we decided to do. So I suggest talk to your grant officer. Like I said, second time's a charm. We got better, much better the second time we applied, and we had a lot more time. And during that year, we created partnerships with a number of institutions. UC Berkeley Library is going to be preserving and making our audio available on their library catalog. University of Maryland is housing our master reels after we finish preserving them, digitally preserving them. The Internet Archive is also hosting our audio. And George Blood Audio has digitized a number of our grant projects and is doing all the digitization for this project as well. The photo on the left is a little snapshot of our shelves at Pacifica. All the little white pieces of paper are tapes that have been pulled for this project. So I just wanted to give you a glimpse of like what a big chunk of our vaults are contained in this collection. So the first, the methodology that we created for the application, this is the order that we had the methodology, in batches of 425 tapes. So four batches of 425 tapes are the 1,700 that will be digitized, and then we have a final fifth batch that, like I said, is already digitized. We're just going to be reviewing the audio and cataloging it. So the methodology was first the appraisal and accession of analog materials. We already have the tapes in-house, but we are accessioning them into the American Women Collection, which is an artificial collection just based on these parameters, like I said before. We accession them by moving them off of these vault shelves and onto a designated row of vault shelves. And then when we describe the tape, we in the catalog record, we add a keyword called American Women Making History and Culture, and therefore we can easily see which tapes have been included in the project and are therefore being processed with the project. We do a description of the tape. All of the recordings had a catalog record, but Holly will talk later about what that catalog record looked like before we did some first level cataloging. Then we send them off to George Blood for digitization. When we receive the audio, we do a quick quality control of the audio and then accession the audio into our server. Then we do a second level of cataloging now that we have the audio to listen to, and then, which Holly will talk about later, then we will be disseminating the audio to Internet Archive. UC Berkeley will be sending a copy to University of Maryland. And then long-term preservation will be ongoing. And we've been doing promotion of this project for 2 years. And that will continue once this is over. This is the gratuitous snapshot photo of the Pacifica family during our first tape condition assessment. So in 3 days, we did a physical assessment of 425 tapes. In the physical assessment, we indicate the tape substrate, what kind of condition the reel is in, whether it's on a reel or on a hub. We rehouse them in new boxes if warranted. We have to rewind a number of them. Like this one on the top right corner, that's not unusual to open up a box and see that. The smart person on the bottom one just put masking tape across the tape to make sure that that doesn't happen. So George Blood gets those and gets to deal with those for us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We always have new storage challenges. So we do that 425 tapes in about 3 or 4 days. It's quite a circus. Then we box up the tapes and we ship them to George Blood after the first level cataloging. But Holly's going to talk about that. So we do the first level cataloging and then we box them up. And that way, when we send the audio to George Blood, we're also sending metadata that can be embedded in the audio file when we receive it back from him. That metadata sometimes ends up not being accurate because once we listen to it, we find out it's a completely different thing than it said before. But anyway, we pack up these bins. And we ship them off to him, and that's my coworker, Mark Torres, packing up that box. And this is just a little sample of when you look in one of those boxes, what you see. And I just was like, oh, let me take a picture. And just this list of tapes kind of is mind-blowing. There's a tape called European Feminist, then Mary, Our Lady Queen of Feminists, Women in Alienation, Work Boxing, which is basically about women boxers, an interview with feminist Andrea Dworkin, The Lesbian in Literature, and then I know that BC2069 is actually a really good series. I can't remember which one it is, but you can't read it. But you can see the white ones with the handwriting. Those are the newly reboxed tapes. And then the old ones with the big, thick pen on them are the old tapes. And interestingly, these new boxes ended up falling apart while we shipped them back and forth to George Blood. So we've had to re-rebox a number of them and add these little inserts in them because we got inexpensive boxes and because we are on a very tight budget. Anyway, when we get the audio back from George Blood, it appears in this tiny little box, all of those big boxes compressed into this tiny little portable hard drive. And we immediately put it on our server in-house. That is a dedicated audio server, which I begged and plead Pacifica to buy us so that it's not accessible to anyone except for the two archivists in-house for preservation purposes. And then we do a quick review of some outstanding issues. We didn't have this list in place when we started the project. These kind of came up as we were reviewing audio. And so we tick these boxes in our catalog to flag for follow-up later. Some of the issues are that our tapes were longer than the standard 45 minutes, so the WAV files got split into two WAV files, so we have to suture those together. Some of them, once we listen to them, they're not actually about women. Like one, for example, was about rape, but it turned out to be specifically about rape of men in prison, and so it doesn't really have anything to do with women. Some of them turned out to not be in the date scope. Maybe they were, it says it was broadcast in 75, but it was actually originally broadcast in 56. But it's still important, you know, if it's about women and it's from 1956, even though it's not between 63 and 82. So we're just flagging those. We're not excluding them or making them unavailable, but we're just flagging them. We have a few that once we listened to them, we noticed that they're a duplicate of another recording, but they had a completely different title, they had completely different station, date, and everything. That's how it goes with audio. Some of them turn out to be mostly pre-recorded music. This has happened, I think, only twice or three times so far. It's not a frequent thing, but it is really disappointing. One was supposed to be about Ricky Lee Jones, which I assumed would be an interview with Ricky Lee Jones, and it's just someone playing her favorite Ricky Lee Jones songs for like 45 minutes. There's, of course, a number of readings of published materials. It's a big part of our collection. We have Anise Nin reading her poetry or her journals, and we're flagging them. We're making them all available for research use. We've always included readings in our collection. It's a big part of our collection is poetry, and we haven't had any issues, but kind of like Brewster Kahle was saying earlier this morning, if anyone has a complaint, we take it down. We have a takedown notice, and we haven't received any complaints, but we just flag it to do some due diligence and research on things. If we have a relationship with that person or their foundation, we might call them and let them know that we have these recordings. Other rights issues, major audio issues, whether or not editing is required for broadcast, sensitive language, and minor audio issues. So once we are done doing the second level cataloging, we'll be disseminating the audio to a number of different places. First of all of the recordings are available on our online catalog at pacificaradioarchives.org. This is just three recordings out of 2,000 that are listed by, if you click on our keyword, American Women Making History and Culture, you can come up to this screen and see all of the recordings in the project. We are also going to be giving them to the Internet Archive, and this is what our web page at the Internet Archive looks like now. These are all of our grant projects we've done before. And UC Berkeley, this is a pilot project of 50 recordings that are being hosted at UC Berkeley's OSCE catalog. And last will be uploading a searchable finding aid to the Online Archive of California. So now I'm going to turn it over to Holly.
I'll read your bio. That's worth it. So, Holly Rose McGee is an audio archivist, digital imager, and arts librarian. She was born and raised in Pittsburgh, but now resides in L.A. No one from L.A. Today she'll be talking about her work at Pacifica Radio Archives, and she has just started a new position at the Getty Museum's Research Institute. And this is her first ARSC.
Thanks, guys. Oh, sure. Thanks. Thank you. Okay, so I got to come on to the team at Pacifica to catalog the collection. I did participate in some of the first-level cataloging, but the majority of my work was second-level cataloging, which was after we received our digital files back from George Blood AP. The first level of cataloging, basically, we just took what we had off the box. If there was any information at all, whatever was there, we put that into our records, and then we just moved on. It was pretty quick and dirty, but we wanted to get the basics down. So this is where we start. We have our box, and I think we all know what it looks like inside the box. So tape is one of these things that is, it's a media that is machine readable only. It's not the sort of thing like a book where you can just open it up and look at it, you know what the title is. Sometimes you have to listen for 5 or 7 minutes before you get to the title. So that's one of the unique factors in cataloging audio. Now, some of the older cataloging that had been done in the past looked like this, which I don't know how much you can see on here, but basically there's a title, there is an archive number, there is no description, date recorded or broadcast, there is an item duration that gives us a hint of whether it's a 7-inch tape or a 10-inch tape, and the distributor is null. So these are not helpful records, and these are some of the legacy records we've had to deal with. So what ends up happening after we go through this whole process is something much more filled out and fleshed out like this. So we have a full description. It says what station the program was broadcast on, date recorded, date broadcast, the duration, linkable keywords, which I guess you probably can't really see, but one of them is American Women Making History and Culture, 1963 to 1982. So every record in the collection gets that keyword, so you can just click on that and you'll find the whole list of everything. Also, the lower one in blue is the contributor, so that's anyone who dealt with the creation of the project from the technical end, so the producers, the technical producers, anybody else who is involved on the radio station's end, and those are all hyperlinkable too. And then, yeah, so roll related recordings distributor, so it gets really nice. So how do we get from here to here? Well, we have to have human beings, which is not something that administrators like to hear about, but this can't be done by machine, it has to be done by people. In our particular situation, we're using Drupal as a content management system, but it's also how we manage our website. It's really fantastic because for the most part, all of the things that we want to change about how our website looks, we can actually do ourselves. And we get, you know, there are complicated things and we have to call our IT guy and he helps us fix everything. But a lot of this we can just do ourselves, how our front page looks, what's going to be a featured thing, what things link to other things. It's really fantastic. And we also use PBCore, which is the metadata standard for audiovisual media created by the public broadcasting community. So after we put all of these things together, we get these really nice records. We've got a tape box scan in this one. We've got a nice long list of keywords. And then one of the lower items in blue down there is actually a link to our folios on the Internet Archive. So the Internet Archive, not sure exactly when they did this, but they digitized all of our folios that we had from all 5 Pacifica stations. And they're all completely searchable, they're beautiful, you can flip them like you're turning the pages like it's right there in your hands, or you can get a text file or PDF, they're all searchable, they're wonderful. So thank you, Internet Archive, for that. Now, another fun little thing is in the lower right-hand corner, there's this little guy that Jolene created recently. It's the PRA metadata view. So this is the view you're going to see when you do your search and you Google Angela Davis and Berkeley in 1973 or something, and then you come up with this record. But if you click on that little guy, this is all the back end. This is everything we're doing behind the curtain. And we figured out there are about 70 to 85 fields per record that have to be populated by a human being. So that's an interesting metric that we picked up along the way. So where do we get our information to populate all these fields? We get them from the box, which can or cannot be accurate. For instance, one of our favorite stories about that is that we had a tape box that said commentary of a black Southern bus rider. And it was actually an interview with Rosa Parks a week after the incident on the bus. And that recording, once we opened the box and digitized it, is now used at the Henry Ford Museum. They actually have the bus that she was on in the museum, and you can go sit in the bus, and they play our recording of our interview with her in that museum. So that's kind of fun. So it's important what you write on your boxes. And then we take information from our folios on the Internet Archive. This is just an example of a page spread. I also start off with, for authority files for names, I start with the Library of Congress authorities. It's accessible to anybody. You don't need a login or password. It's authorities.loc.gov. If I can't find it there, I go to the virtual international authority file because they pool records, authority files from all over the world. So that can often be very helpful too. And if I don't find it there, I take a last stab at the Getty Research Institute's Union List of Artist Names. That's also a really great database to dip into. And there were a lot of women's names who I couldn't find. So I kept Googling, and every time I Googled, I came up with Google Books scan of this book. And so finally, we just bought a copy for the office. But it's basically an encyclopedia of all the women in this movement who are notable and noteworthy, and lots of whom appear in our collection. So that was fun. But mostly, you just have to listen, because you don't know what you have until you hear it. So now I'm going to jump into some of the review the challenges that I came across. Our biggest challenge was legacy metadata created by non-archivists. Since all the Pacifica network is made up of publicly funded, I mean, everything is publicly funded. We're doing fund drives all the time, and that's where we get our money. And now we get it from grants, but basically it's been run by volunteers for years, and you don't always have the same volunteers, so you know, you'd have someone work there for a year and then they run out of money and they're gone again. So that was always a challenge. And also our archive is in a live radio station. KPFK is the building that we're in. So we've got producers coming up all the time. They want to take people on tours. They have visitors like Lily Tomlin. So yeah, you stop working for a little bit and have your picture taken with Lily Tomlin, because who's not going to do that? Or we have to stop, you know, what we're doing because we ran out of money and we have to do fundraising. So we have to stop and just plan for a fund drive. So that happens too. Also, that audio cataloging doesn't come with verified or printed information. So, you know, it just takes a little bit longer than cataloging books because you have to actually process information internally before you can get through it. Then listening through layers of sound in broadcast programming, like lighters and smoking and coughing, there's a lot of that you hear background noise or the mic's not set up properly, again, with, you know, volunteers producing these programs. But then we also don't want to get too deep into our cataloging, because that can happen too. You get wrapped up in a story or program and you just can't stop listening to it, but you have to, because we're on a schedule. Copyright restrictions, it's more like a copyright review, and you saw the tick boxes that Jolene showed before, and those are mostly just for us to keep track if we want to go back and do more metrics later on. It's more just a review, but that's something that came up along the way. For instance, sometimes things would say no dubs, paid or otherwise. And we have to review all of these because sometimes they are just historic. Like we had an interview with a member of the Black Panther Party, and the producer wanted to remain completely anonymous, but when I asked our director about it, he said that was just because of the time. The FBI was a big fear factor, and so he didn't want his name on this record because he was afraid of the FBI. So hopefully we don't have that problem much anymore. and then the main problem that I kept running across that was really the biggest challenge is that women's history is just not as well documented as men's history. So the names are not out there. I mean, even within our cataloging records, the contributors, the producers' names were not in our catalog records. All the male producers were, but the female producers had not yet appeared as the hyperlinked fields. So I got really upset at first that I was having so much trouble finding these people's names until I realized this is actually proving why this project is so important, because our catalog is Googleable. So, you know, and then once the files go up on the Internet Archive, then they're going to be listenable too. So we are providing the access, and I thought that was, it's a challenge that's actually kind of a blessing in disguise. So I'll leave you on that Courtney note and pass it back to Jolene. Thanks.
Okay, real quick, just gonna go over some other challenges in the project so far. That we've had to change our methodology a little bit as we've been going through. Like, we started scanning all of the boxes and printing them once we, that wasn't included in our original methodology, but we realized how invaluable the information was on the boxes naturally, and then the labels were falling off. So we scanned them and we printed them, and we're using the printouts for cataloging. And then the re-reboxing, which I mentioned before. Also having to make updates to our content management system, adding new metadata fields to capture, and adding project tracking fields as new stumbling blocks come up. We want to make sure things have been done and taken care of, and then tracking who did that and what date. And then we have to work with our developer, who's here in Pittsburgh, on formatting the record display. Every time we edit that record, he has to change the display, the public display, when we add new information to it. And that can be really frustrating. Staffing changes, like we said, Holly was with us. She's not anymore. We ran out of money to keep her on. So we have a little bit less support towards these last few months. But we also didn't know she was going to be part of the project, so we were really lucky to have her for all the time that we did. But we have to kind of change our workflow a little bit when she left. And I just want to say, please follow us at our blog, womenmakinghistoryblog.wordpress.com. And I want to end with a little quote, a little something from Audre Lorde, 1978, reading from her cancer journals.
I was going to die, if not sooner, then later, whether or not I had ever spoken myself. My silences had not protected me. Your silence will not protect you. What are the words you do not yet have? What do you need to say? What are the tyrannies you swallow day by day and attempt to make your own, until you will sicken and die of them, still in silence? Perhaps for some of you here today, I am the face of one of your fears, because I am woman, because I am black, because I am lesbian, because I am myself, a black woman warrior doing my work, come to ask you, are you doing yours?
Okay. That's just an example of one of the amazing voices in our collection and why it's so important to be preserving them. Thank you.
Just a little bit of time for maybe one or two questions.
Hello, This question is mostly for Holly. Was there any thought in using Pop-Up Archive to automatically transcribe all the audio and then catalog based on the transcription output?
Funny you should ask. We do have a relationship with the Pop-Up Archive.
I thought you might.
And actually, Jolene knows more about that than I do.
Yeah, we probably will give them these recordings when we're done. They have our pilot project on the Pop-Up Archive of previously digitized recordings, but we haven't used it for the actual, we're not storing our recordings through them, but they kind of developed the Pop-Up Archive at the same time I developed our content management system, so we ended up going a separate direction, but we do submit our materials to them. We have a bunch of recordings there and transcriptions happening. Does that answer your question?
It does, thanks. Actually, and how is the output of the transcriptions?
Messy.
All right.
We're working on it.
But it's easier for the recording.
Where did you find the additional information when you went from the original records, records just from off the labels of the boxes, to the more fully cataloged records? How did you find that information that fully fleshed out the catalog?
Mostly from listening to it. Like I said, I'd look in the folio. Sometimes there were pretty good descriptions in the folio, and that was especially useful for spellings of names that they might have spoken on the recording, but I didn't have any idea how to spell them. But mostly just from listening and transcribing. Sometimes they would say when it was. Sometimes it took some sleuthing, actually, to listen to them talk about other current events happening, and they might happen to mention what day it was. And I have this nifty calendar that is a perpetual calendar. You can go back and figure out, like, what date a Monday was. So I use that, too.
Yeah, and the folios are invaluable for finding the dates of things. But finding the stuff on the Internet Archive is sometimes complicated, but we're pretty much experts. If anyone needs help finding things on the Internet Archive, how to find things by date and content.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.